wake up. There's no sleeping in on Saturday. It's time for the Paul Santos Show on WBSM. Join Paul as he tackles local issues, current events, and fun conversations. Call 508-996-0500 or send Paul an app chat message on the WBSM app. Hey, hey, hey. Now, here's Paul Santos. What you got to say?
Welcome back to hour number two of the Paul Santos Show here on this beautiful Saturday morning. We have a special guest as promised. He is a Republican. He is running for Bristol County District Attorney 1 year from now. The first Republican to run since 1974. We welcome to our microphones attorney Seth Aiken. Good morning, Seth.
Morning, Paul. Glad to be here.
Yeah, great to see you. Great to see you here. And I've been telling my audience that I ran into both you and Tom Quinn at one of the Bar Association dinners, and you know, we were chatting a little bit, and I invited you both to come on the show, and Tom said he might come on later on, but you decided to come on right away as the challenger, even though it's a year from now, and we're glad that you're here.
Thanks. Yeah, there's a lot of time left, but you know, figure start out strong, let people know who I am and what I stand for, why I'm running, and then maybe later on I can come back and let you know how the race is going.
All right, sounds good. You know, I thought we'd start with your resume. People are probably wondering, okay, who is Seth Aiken, right? How long has he been an attorney? What kind of background does he have, both as a prosecutor, defense attorney? What kind of law does he practice? What is the Seth Aiken resume?
The Seth Aiken resume starts in the United States Army. Right out of college, I was commissioned as an active duty officer, combat engineer. Spent some time overseas, did that for about 8 years. And when I got back, it was kind of one of these moments that I think most service people have coming out of service. What do I do now? And I think when you've dedicated that much of your life at that point to that kind of public service, it just makes sense to continue doing that. It's really the it feels like the right thing to do. And so I went to law school, and right out of law school, became an assistant district attorney under Sam Sutter. Spent a couple of years doing that, taught at the UMass Law School for 1 year, really missed the camaraderie of practicing law. And at that point, my father, who had been a practitioner in Worcester County for 40 years, I think was getting ready to retire. I didn't want to miss the opportunity to learn from him, to practice with him. So we had about 5 years together, and it was great. It was really an incredible opportunity to spend that time with him. He retired. He's living in Florida. He's very happy. And at that point, I went back to the DA's office, was there for a few years. Went to the city of Fall River, where I was city administrator for 3 years and assistant corporation counsel for a year. And now I'm back in private practice. So fairly diverse practice, kind of a unusual path. Most of it has been public service. And frankly, I think of criminal defense, which is the majority of my practice, as a public service as well. I think those folks need a voice. Can't always help them out of problems that they might have created themselves. But I think I can certainly help to make sense of the situation for them, help them navigate the options, and hopefully get the best outcome I can for them.
Well, first of all, I always like to say to veterans, thank you for your service. And secondly, son of an attorney, that I did not know. So you must have really learned a lot from your dad.
I did. And he was practicing and started practicing at a time when it was much more common to be the general practitioner family lawyer. So he, you know, he had people, whether it was outside the hardware store on a Saturday or after church or just, you know, throughout the week, coming to him with all sorts of issues, all sorts of questions. And at that time, it was a pretty normal thing for a family lawyer to engage in all sorts of different areas of law. And so from him, I not only learned a love of the law and an interest in the practice, but also this idea that that when people are coming to you, most of the time it's in a really difficult moment. It's in they're in the midst of something that they don't understand and do not have the tools or the expertise to get themselves out of. And you need to stop. And even when you may not want to, even when you just want to, you know, like I said, get out of the hardware store, get out of church, whatever. You know, having the empathy, the grace, the patience is an essential part of the practice. I learned that from him.
And you've been an attorney for, what, 2 decades now?
Almost, yeah. So started in the DA's office end of 2009, so 16 years thereabouts. And since then, that's everything I described, the DA's office, private practice, with my dad, city administrator, that's all been in that time.
Why run for district attorney at this particular time?
So that's a great question, because it's...
That's the one that Ted Kennedy blew. Remember, right? He couldn't answer the question and he went down the tubes?
You know, let me start out by saying I'm not a politician. It's not really in my nature to think about running for something. And frankly, at the end of the day, I love nothing more than being home with my wife. I'm married to my best friend for the last 26 years. I have an incredible life, a wonderful house. I love everything I have. So why kind of... blow it up in terms of, knocking on doors and being out there. And not that I'm not glad to be here, Paul, but it is a beautiful day outside. Mm-hmm. And I could probably be home having a coffee. The reason is I think there is a sense of complacency in the DA's office right now. I don't think the leadership is effective. I have nothing against Tom Quinn personally. Tom's not a bad guy at all. But I don't think he's the leader that we need in the DA's office. As somebody who has practiced criminal law under different administrations and also been in assistant DA under different administrations, I'm seeing that there's not enough resources, training, personnel in the district court, which is where 99% of the cases begin and end, the criminal cases that are brought in Bristol County. And on top of that, I don't think there is enough emphasis on collaboration with federal and state law enforcement to assist and augment our local law enforcement. I think they're having trouble recruiting and retaining officers. So why can't the district attorney use his influence, use his position to go to the state police, to go to federal agencies, say, hey, you can do operations here. You can do work in this county that assists the police. You can do task force that include our local police. So they're not just reacting to crime. They're actually able to do proactive long-term investigations that really cut the head off the snake, stop the flow of drugs and gang activity and guns into our neighborhoods. Because right now, I think the police are doing the absolute best they can, and it isn't. They're doing an amazing job considering the resources they have, but I don't think there is pressure out there on the streets on the people that would do us harm.
We're talking to Seth Aiken. He is running for district attorney. It's going to be on the ballot a year from now. Bristol County District Attorney, the current sitting district attorney, Thomas Quinn, has not announced whether he's running again. I'm assuming that he's running again, but he has not announced yet. He's a Democrat, and Seth Aiken, the challenger, is a Republican. You know, I'm sure if Tom was here, he would say, gee, you know, we have a real good working relationship with the police. We've had some really great successful prosecutions. Of course, the Aaron Hernandez case, the New England Patriot wide receiver, that big murder case. They worked very closely with state police and local police. But you're saying you think you would have a different approach. You think you could do better.
I do think I could do better. And I think you can only dine out for so long on those big cases, because the big cases are certainly the ones the media pays attention to. It's the one the public hears about. But those represent less than 1% of the cases that come into the court that really affect the lives of everyday people. The folks who are victims of crime and witnesses to crime, who live in neighborhoods where crime is occurring, where gang members are moving in, where drugs are being sold. And those aren't just the neighborhoods you're thinking of. Sometimes, you know, what we're talking about are these nicer neighborhoods that people don't think have an issue. And unfortunately, they do. And I'll bet there's folks out there that know exactly what I'm talking about. Those quote unquote smaller cases, the less exciting cases that get less attention, that's 99% of the cases that are out there, and I don't think they're getting the focus, they're getting the resources, that the people who are prosecuting those are getting the encouragement and the support that they need to do the very best job they can. They're overwhelmed. There's 16 to 18,000 cases a year in Bristol County in the district court, and there's a total of 25 prosecutors amongst all four courts that are handling those. 25 prosecutors for 16 to 17,000 cases. If you do that math, that's not a very easy caseload. In fact, it's overwhelming. It's a tidal wave. And the way I could do better is I believe that I could use the office to bring more law enforcement presence in the county. And then I could also make sure that the district court staff is strengthened so that those arrests and investigations that law enforcement does so heroically can be converted into convictions. And convictions are what makes our neighborhood safer.
Well, one of the things you point out, which I agree with, and that is that the district court prosecutor is looked upon, or maybe not looked upon, but certainly not given the respect that they deserve. I mean, I served as a district court prosecutor for almost 7 years, and you look around the courtroom and court officers, clerks that are calling the list, all people that deserve to be paid well. They're all making like 2-3 times more than probably the most important person in the room, which is the district court prosecutor. And I remember at the time saying, I can't stay in this job. I have to leave. I ended up leaving. I would have liked to have stayed and been a career district court prosecutor because I felt that strongly about that position. Now, the thing is, it's easier to say, hey, we're going to get more people and we're going to pay them more and all that. But then, of course, you're going to be up against budgetary constraints and all that. So how do you do that? How do you fix that problem that certainly exists in the district court?
So this is where my experience as city administrator in Fall River, I think, is valuable. What I saw very quickly is that you never have the resources to pay people, not just what they want, but what you can very quickly see their worth. And there's some tremendous people in local government, in law enforcement, and definitely in the DA's office that are not making what they're worth. So pay cannot be the only calculus there. Because you're not going to be able to give people what they want. I will say that Tom has actually done a really good job of increasing the pay of district court prosecutors. No question about it. When I started under Sam Sutter, I think the annual pay for a prosecutor starting was $37,500, which is kind of funny today.
Yeah.
It's grown considerably, which is great. It's still not on par with what you'd be making in private practice and a lot of other government agencies. So I think in addition to steadily increasing pay and advocating the legislature and the governor for bigger budgets for district attorney's offices, because the budgets are actually significantly smaller than one might think, I think you can also create an environment where those prosecutors understand that they're getting training they're not going to get anywhere else. They're getting support to become the very best lawyers they could possibly be. They're essentially creating a practice in the district attorney's office that is going to carry them for the rest of their careers. I don't believe that's happening right now. And so not only do people get burnt out, they don't see a reason to stay. And most of the younger district court prosecutors, they go in and really are just looking for that moment, that opportunity to get up to the superior court, where you have much less of a caseload, you have much sexier cases, and that's fine. But there needs to be an emphasis on, hey, the district court is an incredibly important place to be. And if you're a district court prosecutor, you have a place of honor and prestige and importance with the district attorney. I'm not sure they ever see him except for when they're in trouble. I mean, that's the culture. That was the culture when I was there. It's been the culture forever and ever. You got to see the leader, and the leader has to lead from the front. A lot of people think leadership is just being in charge, and it's not. Leadership is setting an example. It's support. It's encouragement. It's being willing to do the thing you're asking your people to do. I learned that in the Army. I believe I've continued that in every leadership position I've been in. And I've seen too many ineffective leaders not to make the choice to run now, because I believe I can be an effective leader, not just an effective DA.
So if you become Bristol County District Attorney, we can expect to see you in the hustle and bustle of the district court and kind of hands-on interacting with your prosecutors and really paying attention to what's going on at the front line.
That's exactly right. I'm not going to be in the arraignment session of New Bedford District Court every day. But I am gonna be there enough to know the names of every prosecutor who's there, to understand what it is that they're worried about, what it is that they're excited about, to be able to say, hey, great job, or hey, could we have done this better, from a firsthand point of view, rather than just because I heard it through three layers of bureaucracy. Right now, there's a tight circle around the DA. I don't think most people really get to him or see him or talk to him. And I think that's too bad because, Tom's a guy with a lot of experience. I think he could have a lot to share with his junior DAs, but that's not what's happening. And I think the district court and the superior court, frankly, is worse off for it, which means the residents are worse off for it.
We're talking to Seth Aiken. He's running for Bristol County District Attorney. That race will not be on the ballot until 1 year from now, but we figured we'd give him a little bit of a head start. We ran into him a little while back, along with Tom Quinn. We invited both to come on the show. Seth has accepted so far. Tom said he may come on a little bit closer to the race, which, again, is a year from now. If you have any questions for our guest, we are at 508-996-0500. Going to get into the transparency question. That's something that Seth brought up when he decided to run, and some of the other ideas that he has going forward as district attorney. Back in a moment with more of the Paul Santo Show here at WBSM.
Bye.
No topic is off limits. Paul Santos is live and taking your calls on WBSM.
All right, we are back here on the Paul Santos Show for a Saturday morning. Our guest is Seth Aiken. He's running for Bristol County District Attorney, which will be on the ballot 1 year from now. Current sitting District Attorney Tom Quinn has been in office since 2015. Before we pick this conversation back up with Seth, I would like to remind you that Mattapoisett Town Meeting will take place today, Saturday, October 4th at 1 p.m. at the Old Rochester High School Gym. Among the issues, voters will decide whether to expand or keep the select board at 3 members. Paul Crisciolo is encouraging residents to vote yes to keep the select board at 3, pointing to Mattapoisett's AAA bond rating, low tax increases, and history of sound financial management under the current system. Remember, Mattapoisett, your voice matters. That's today at 1 p.m. at the Old Rochester Regional Gym. This message was brought to you by Paul Crisciolo. All right, Seth Aitken here, running for district attorney as a Republican, the first one to do so since 1974. I think we've got the resume out of the way and the general thoughts on what he might do differently as district attorney. There's a couple of things that he mentioned specifically when he first announced that he was running for district attorney, and that had to do with transparency. Is there something in particular that you're thinking that this administration is not doing in that area?
So I think there's very little information that ever comes out of this administration. And I understand, having done this work, that you can't always share with the public every detail of whether it's an investigation or a prosecution. Some of it's either incredibly complicated or needs to be kept private for the safety and whether it's of the actual proceeding or the people involved. But at the end of the day, I think the public is losing faith day by day in its local government. And they're losing faith in the police. They're losing faith in the DA. They're losing faith in the legislature. You name it. I believe that there's an undermining of belief and faith that the folks that they've elected and appointed are doing what they need to do to protect the interests of the public. But that's not always true. And the only way to dispel that belief is to communicate constantly. If people don't want to listen, that's fine. But at least put the message out there. And I don't think this DA's office does a very good job at all communicating about the stuff that really matters to folks. And it becomes even worse when there are things happening within the DA's office or around the DA's office that should be talked about. So very recently, early in September, the Board of Bar Overseers, which is our for lawyers, the Supreme Judicial Court has this board that oversees attorney conduct. They recommended, because of a case that happened almost 20 years ago, that Tom's kind of right-hand lawyer be suspended for 2 years because of something she did a long time ago.
Now, who's this?
Her name is Karen O'Sullivan. And the report not only implicated Karen, but it implicated the Bristol County DA's head of homicide, too, Dennis Collins. Now, both of those folks are as far as I'm concerned, very decent people. They've always been fine to me. But when you have the agency that oversees judicial conduct saying that these folks have undermined the faith that people have in their right to have a fair trial and diminished the reputation of prosecutors across the Commonwealth, I think you've got to say something. And this district attorney has said nothing. He's done nothing. And in fact, those people continue to work in the DA's office. There may be a good reason for that, but we don't know. And that's the problem. It's not that I'm making a judgment about what happened or what didn't happen. It's that we have no idea what happened. It's really the same with the Anthony Hardin case. Anthony Hardin was a gentleman who I came across when I was a prosecutor. He had an incident, minor incident, but then several years later ended up being the victim of a police shooting. And I'm not here to comment on whether it was a righteous shooting or whether it was a bad shooting, because we don't know. The DA's office has stood in the way every single time. Eric Mack, his brother, has tried to get information in order to move forward with what he believes is a clear cause of action against both the city and the police for the shooting. The problem with when the district attorney's office stands in the way of that is the only thing people could possibly conclude is that there's something to hide. And the more people believe there's something to hide, the less faith they have in the people who are leading them. And finally, there's a woman, Eliciana Gonzalez, She is, there's been a number of marches, No More Secrets in Fall River is what they're calling it. Alisiana and her mother brought her case to the DA's office, alleging she was raped when she was 4 years old, so about 20 years ago. She's now a teacher in Fall River Public Schools. The DA's office under Sam Sutter did not want to take that case. Alisiana brought the case again last year to the DA's office under Tom Quinn. No interest in the case. They have significant evidence. They have significant testimony and other accounts that would support what they're doing. There are always reasons why the DA's office maybe can't go forward on a case, but talk to the public about what they are. That's it's just radio silence. And in fact, when Alisiana found out that they weren't prosecuting her case, it was a phone call from another prosecutor, a lower level prosecutor, saying, hey, we're not going to go forward. It wasn't a meeting. It wasn't face to face. It wasn't. There was no detail. There was no explanation. There was no nothing. That, to me, is a huge problem. And now here's the thing. Without any of that communication, it very easily leads to the belief that there is something going on, that there are things being hidden. If there are things being hidden, that's a big deal, because public corruption is going to be a huge part of what I focus on as district attorney. But I'm not even there yet, because we don't know. And we have to be able to know. The public has to know what's going on in the offices and in the minds of the elected officials, because the public put them there to do their duty, to follow the law. And if we don't know that they're following the law, it's really hard to believe in what they are doing. Just those are three examples. There are more. Of the way that this DA's office has not been transparent. They've not been forthcoming. They don't feel that they have any accountability to the public to explain what's going on. And I would argue that they do. Under my administration, we would talk to the public. We would be transparent. We would be available. I would not lock myself in a fourth floor office behind a locked elevator and several locked doors and no one could get to me. I would be part of the everyday workings of the DA's office, because the people deserve that. That's what they're entitled to. That's what I would give them.
Might there be examples where, say, in that case that you said that they decided not to prosecute, that maybe there could be some embarrassment if the district attorney's office decided that maybe there was some credibility issues with the complaining witness and they didn't want to come out and say that, so then they just kind of kept quiet about it? I mean, are there examples where sometimes it's better for the information not to be, you know, brought out there so you know, with a spotlight on it?
Sure, absolutely. There's a bunch of reasons not to prosecute a case. It could be a credibility issue. It could be that when you have a child victim, you don't want to re-victimize the victim by having them have to go through the testimony and the interviews and all the things that lead up to a prosecution and ultimately a trial.
Yeah, but you're saying telling the public that, the reason, should they always tell the public that?
So at the very least, you have to tell the victim that. Right. So you have to communicate with victims. And I've heard from so many victims who are incredibly dissatisfied with the level of communication. So as a starting point, you have to be able to be willing to have a candid conversation with your victims. And they may not always be happy with it. I've had these conversations hundreds of times as a prosecutor. They may not always be happy with your answer. But at the very least, you need to talk to them. That's not happening effectively. And then in those moments, and I would say it's more often than not, you are able to share some details with the public that would help them understand why you're doing what you're doing, or at least that you're doing something. This is something we talked about in Government Center when I was city administrator quite a bit. Paul Coogan, not a bad guy, but not a guy who likes to have press conferences, talk to the public, do any of those things. And in an echo chamber, people are going to hear what they want to hear. They're not going to really understand what's going on unless you're talking to them. So I would say communicate as much as you can. And obviously as attorneys, there's things we have to keep private. There is privilege. Fine. But at least explain that. Say, listen, because there's an ongoing investigation, we can't talk about this, but we can tell you that something is happening. And when there's information available, we'll let you know.
We're talking to Seth Aiken. He is running for Bristol County District Attorney. It's going to be on the ballot a year from now, so we're a little bit ahead of the curve. If you have any questions for Seth, you can give us a call here at 508-996-0500. Seth, you mentioned the time you spent as city administrator, and I know in a newspaper article it was brought up about an issue that arose whereby you were alleged to have a conflict of interest and you ended up resigning as city administrator. What would you like to say about that?
I'm glad you asked about that, because that's an important thing. I think without this is another thing where there was very little information that was ever given about what happened. And I would have been very happy for that to have seen the light of day. there was a gentleman in Government Center who I knew wasn't happy with where he felt things were going. Didn't have a great relationship with the supervisor, that sort of thing. And there's a lot of those. But this guy, you know, was somebody who I would say I became friends with. And he said, "Hey, can you help me, start this company idea that I have? You're a lawyer. You've done this. Can you help me with it?" And I filled out some papers, helped him, put together, the organization and fill out the filings with the Secretary of State. Probably an hour of work, right? I talked to him about the idea. I talked to a lot of people about a lot of ideas. People confided in me. They talked to me. This was not an unusual thing to have a relationship where somebody came to me because they felt like they could talk to me about something they were thinking about or dreaming about or whatever. However, ultimately, weird turn of events, that same guy ended up being in the running for the EMS chief position. I don't think any of us thought that the chief would retire as early as he did. I never expected that there would be any position where he would be in the running and I would be part of that process. And it certainly appeared to be a conflict of interest. So in retrospect, I should have told the mayor about it. I didn't really think anything of it. It seemed like such a minor thing to help him with. It wasn't anything that I could benefit from, that I expected to benefit from. And so by not telling the mayor, that I had helped this guy, it then created this appearance. And I will say, I think leaders always put the organization and the people over themselves. So I could have stayed, fought and said, "Oh, there's nothing here. I didn't do anything," and protested and done, but that's not who I am. I'm not going to distract from the work the organization is doing simply to benefit myself. Wasn't going to do it. So rather than dig into it and fight and do this whole thing, I said, I'm doing this because I think it's an important job and I think I can help people. But if the idea is that, there's going to be this question, I'm not going to let that question distract from the work that the people are doing. So I walked away and I've never been happier. My practice is thriving. Things are great. I didn't do anything wrong, but I also know that I should have let the mayor know. I should have been more public with him about the fact that I helped this guy out.
Do you think it was more of the appearance of a conflict of interest, or do you think it really was a conflict of interest?
So my sense is that it was the appearance of a conflict of interest. I never did anything to give this guy that I helped any sort of advantage in Government Center, in his government service. In fact, when he was in the running for the chief's position, I actually recommended to the mayor that he appoint Beth Fonts, who is now the chief, because she had the most seniority. She was the deputy. It felt like it was her time. She had been there for 30 plus years. So there was nothing I ever recommended to the mayor or ever did that benefited this person in any way or would have benefited myself as a result of helping him. So I think it was the appearance of a conflict. People might disagree and I respect that. That's okay. I'm glad to talk about it. But it was kind of one of these unfortunate things where you say, yeah, you know what? That could have been handled better and that could have been handled differently. Those things happen in life. But interestingly, the timing was almost perfect because the flexibility I have as a private attorney to, my middle boy just graduated from high school, was off to Brown. He was valedictorian. There was all these things. I got to see every single one of them. Not being on a clock is kind of great. Mm-hmm. And so the timing ended up being kind of perfect.
Well, your dad was an attorney. You're an attorney. Any of your kids want to be attorneys?
No. It's funny. None of them want to serve in the military. None of them want to be attorneys.
They got to have their own path.
But I will say that the thing I'm proud of is, because those are very tangible. That's very tangible evidence of, oh, they're taking after me. They are growing up to be men of, I have three sons, 21, 18, and almost 15. They're creative, they're smart, they're curious. I think good leaders have to be curious. They have to wonder about things and want to fix things. They are, these guys are. They have integrity and they're kind. Not just nice, but kind. And so to me, I'm really proud of all three of them. Couldn't ask for anything better. And my wife and I just couldn't be happier with what that experience has been.
You know, you're talking about that appearance of conflict and all that. I remember when I first got out of law school, you know, they have you take that ethics course.
Yeah.
And of course, the ethical canons for attorneys clearly states that you can't do anything unethical, but you can't even do anything that may have the appearance of unethical. So it's like anything even close, you know, and I think that's probably a good rule of thumb to live by.
I agree. And the appearance thing is interesting because, you know, to straight up, you know, ethics, that's almost easy. You know what's right and wrong. I believe in my heart of hearts that every attorney and most people should know the difference between right and wrong. But the idea of what is somebody going to perceive to be right and wrong, especially in Fall River, where I think that people have been conditioned to imagine that everyone is up to no good. You know, they've been through some really difficult times with different elected and appointed officials. There's a ton of suspicion. There's a ton of you know, constant concern. You know, are we being taken advantage of? Is this person doing the right thing? And I think I realizing the environment I was in, I should have been much more on guard for the appearance, because the appearance is tough. It's subjective, but you got to be on the lookout for it.
All right, we're talking to Seth Aiken. He's running for Bristol County District Attorney. It's going to be on the ballot 1 year from now, but we figure we bring him in early, get a little ahead of the curve, and find out why he wants to be district attorney. We're going to talk a little bit more about the transparency issue. He spoke when he first decided to run about prosecuting widespread public corruption and mentioned the case where somebody may have been skimming. You know, that phrase they use, skimming, maybe taking some money off the top. What's he talking about there? We'll find out next, right after the break. You're listening to The Paul Santo Show here at WBSM.
Local voices, real talk. You're listening to The Paul Santo Show on WBSM.
Real interesting show we have here this morning. Seth Aiken running for Bristol County District Attorney, running as a Republican, the first one to do so since 1974. You know, I ran into Seth and Tom Quinn at a New Bedford Bar Association event, and, you know, I invited both on the show, and, of course, Seth being the challenger, would like to get in ahead of the curve. Tom said he may come on a little bit later on, but you raised something when you first got here that I didn't even think of, and he didn't say that to me. You know, I asked him, it sounded like he was running, but he hasn't actually said he was running. Do you think he's running?
I can't take the bait on that one, Paul.
Okay.
But here's
it was a good question, though.
It's a great question. It's funny. You know, every week I hear something different. People have all sorts of theories as to whether or not he's running. There's been a couple articles, you know, where I've been very candid about the concerns I have with the DA's office and the level of complacency and the lack of transparency. You know, the lack of training resources and support for the district court, the lack of appetite for going after public corruption, lack of collaboration with the police, all those things. And there really hasn't been any response. And so I think that's led some people to say, oh, he's not running. But at the same time,
he didn't say that to me, just to be clear. When I was talking to him, it sounded like he was to me.
And every time anyone's asked, he said he's running.
Okay.
And so here's the thing. I am proceeding as if my opponent is Tom Quinn, but I got to be honest with you. I don't care. I don't care who my opponent is. Not because I'm indifferent to who they are as a person, but rather I know that there are meaningful changes that desperately need to be made in that office. And I know that I can bring the leadership, the resourcefulness, the personality, the knowledge of how things are supposed to work, my belief in the rule of law to bear so that those changes are made and that people of Bristol County are safer. That's the bottom line. This isn't really a policy job. This isn't like the legislature where it's about, you know, what's your opinion on X, Y, and Z? It's like, no, are we safer or are we not? And right now we're not. And so whoever my opponent is, I'm going to knock on doors. I'm going to raise money. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to be very candid about what I believe and what I intend to do. All those efforts are going to come together with the result of us living in a safer county. That's the thing I care most about.
During one of the newspaper interviews, you had addressed a case in particular, a case where you thought someone was skimming and taking money from, I don't know, one of the government jobs or something like that. And that's a case that you wanted to take a look at.
Yeah, there was a number of investigations, sort of initial inquiries I was part of as city administrator, that, you know, as city administrator, it wasn't necessarily my job to then, you know, undertake the formal investigation. We often would put that out to an independent person or have the police do it. But, you know, initial things were, you know, there's a report of a problem when you start to look into it. And, you know, there was I would say, you know, some reasonable amount of evidence to believe that there was some things going on that really were represented a misuse of taxpayer dollars in terms of how people were paid, in terms of how resources were being used or not used. And we brought that to the DA's office. We brought that to the Fall River Police Department. And there really was not an interest in investigating it. It was surprising. It was discouraging because I think that, you know, people are struggling. They're struggling to do all sorts of things, including pay the tax burden that seems to increase every year without really a significant increase in services coming with it. And so to ask somebody to pay the taxes and just the overall carrying costs of a house and of a life in Bristol County at the level they're at and then not really do everything you can to make sure those tax dollars are being used responsibly is a real disservice. And so there were definitely some things that my eyes were opened in city government to the fact that that I think there certainly was some corruption. Not in the mayor's office, but in some of the other departments, some misuse of resources, and the appearance of corruption that I think bore further investigation, and I wasn't permitted to do that.
Well, you mentioned in your newspaper article the concern about the handling of the romantic or alleged romantic involvement between a judge and a prosecutor. Did you want to comment on that? And again, they both adamantly deny this.
They do. And just full disclosure, you know, Doug Darnbrough is a friend of mine. He's a good man. He's always been great to me from the time I started practicing. And he denies this. So does ADA Butler. She denies this. But here's the problem. Judge Darnbrough was essentially forced to step down in the midst of an investigation. Based largely on rumors and you know, letters, unsigned letters. So if he stepped down and they have appointed a special master and they're continuing to pursue this case, and we've heard nothing from the DA's office about what they have or haven't done with regard to the prosecutor who's alleged to have been involved, again, that raises real questions. I'm not saying that the DA's office is in a position to tell the public everything about that, but at least reassure us that you're doing something, that you are looking into it, that there is an investigation, that you are taking this seriously, and that you're not allowing a judge's reputation and livelihood to be completely taken apart in the media without any accountability for the person on the other side of it. There has to be at least a meaningful, serious, good faith inquiry into this whole thing on the part of the DA's office. And I'm not sure there has been. If there has been, we don't know about it and no one's saying. That really goes back to the transparency, to the communication. It goes back to this idea of restoring the faith that the public needs to be able to have in its government officials and government agencies.
Now, in May, the Supreme Judicial Court, as you referred to, appointed a special master to kind of look into it. Some may say, well, let's wait and see what they say. Let's wait and see what they determine happened, if anything at all. What about that?
So that special master is going to look into the outcomes of cases that Judge Darnbrough presided over. That's going to be their focus. The special master may or may not have access to records that have to do with things that happen internally in the DA's office. I don't think they're going to have access necessarily to some of the minutiae that the DA's office would have access to if they actually looked into it with the people that are in that court every day and around Judge Darnbrough and ADA Butler every day. So the special master, sure, that's great. They have a perspective and a purpose. But I don't know that their perspective and purpose is going to answer the questions that that the public has about whether or not people were getting a fair trial or being prosecuted fairly in New Bedford District Court. You know, Judge Darnbrough, I think, you know, very nobly stepped down, took himself out of the position that caused the questions. Unfortunately, the DA's office has been totally non-communicative about what they are going to do to restore that trust.
We're talking to Seth Aiken. He's running for Bristol County District Attorney. It's going to be on the ballot 1 year from now. After the break, we're going to ask Seth Aiken, who's running as a Republican, what about the view that he may have, I guess we'll find out what his view is, cooperation of police, cooperation with the DA's office as it relates to ICE. You know, a lot of times these ICE detainers are civil detainers. What's the difference between that and a criminal matter? What is the jurisdiction of the district court? And is there a connection between the DA's office and ICE? We'll find that out in a moment right here at WBSM. We'll be right back. It has worked well for Matt Apoizit. So use that voice on Saturday, October 4th. That's today at 1 p.m. at the Old Rochester Regional Gym. This message brought to you by Paul Crisciolo. All right, Seth Aiken here running for Bristol County District Attorney against Tom Quinn, as far as we know. And, you know, Tom Quinn, you know, you talk about being tough on crime. When you run for DA, it's almost like to appeal to the voters. It's almost like you can't be tough enough. But I know Tom, he has been pretty tough in terms of the dangerousness hearings and things like that. The dangerousness hearings, of course, you've heard, we've talked about it before, where a judge can hold somebody, even though they haven't been convicted of anything, if a showing can be made that they are a danger to the community. And District Attorney Quinn wanted to kind of open up the umbrella to cover more categories to make it a little bit easier for prosecutors to ask for their dangerousness hearing. So some may argue, well, that's being pretty tough on crime. What do you think?
I'm not sure I agree it's being tough on crime. Now it is a tremendous tool. It's incredibly effective. The prosecutors, I think, use it a little bit more as a blunt instrument than what the legislature had in mind. And this is what I mean by that. Because the prosecutors have so little effective training and support and ongoing, teaching from the DA about how he wants that used, they just kind of see certain categories of crimes and ask for dangerousness hearings, just almost as a matter of checking a box, right? And what happens there is the judges, it's like the boy who cried wolf. The judges are granting them less and less because they're saying, you know, does this DA even know why they're asking for this dangerousness hearing? So it's starting to backfire a little bit. I think it's an incredible tool, and I actually agree with Tom. And I have no problem saying that because there's probably a few things he and I agree on. I'll just actually do something about it. But he and I agree on around dangerousness hearing specifically, in that it's a tremendous tool to hold somebody who does pose a danger to the public. And we have to make our cities and towns safer. The problem is that when the judges start to lose faith in the ability of the prosecutors to exercise some discretion in understanding when to use that tool, they start to react by giving the prosecutor what they're asking for fewer, you know, less and less and less. And so when I go around to Republican town committees throughout the county, people say, what are you going to do about these liberal judges? Well, the answer is they're not really liberal judges. They're judges who are frustrated by lack of training and leadership. And so they're looking at these prosecutors saying, why are you asking for a dangerousness hearing on this particular case where it's really not appropriate? And unfortunately, what that leads to is they don't get the dangerousness finding on the case where they really should. And that's a really difficult thing. I'm somebody who has known most of the judges for a long time. They know that I'm reasonable and credible, and I have the relationship with them to go back and say, look, we're working on making sure these prosecutors have better ability to use discretion to understand when to use this tool. This is what we're trying to do. I can have that communication with them. I believe this administration has spent way too much time criticizing judges in the media. And when the judges have no ability to actually respond, they're not allowed to respond. And so it just pisses them off, frankly. It makes them mad. And I don't think the relationship with the DA's office and the judges is really what it could be if somebody were to be, you know, credible, reasonable, consistent, and clear in the communication. So I love the dangerousness hearing as a tool. I think the way it's used, unfortunately, diminishes its effectiveness.
ICE is in the news a lot, of course, with the whole campaign to remove people who are not supposed to be here, illegal aliens or the undocumented. What is your position in terms of the district attorney's office cooperating with ICE?
So let me start sort of big picture and then bring my way down to Bristol County. So I support the efforts of the federal government to make sure that people who are here illegally, especially who are here illegally and committing crimes or engaging in activity that leads to the commission of crimes, which is to say being involved in gangs, even if they're not committed crimes themselves, are involved in activity that makes our streets, our neighborhoods, our cities and towns less safe. Those people should not be here. They shouldn't be allowed to stay here. And even if they came here and did those things early on and now they've tried to make a better life, at the end of the day, there's a right way to do something. That's what makes a Republican, a Democrat, a Democrat. Democrats think about, you know, what might make sense for the individual. It's more emotive in my mind. You know, how do we feel about this for the individual person? And Republicans are like, how does this benefit the organization, the institution, the community? And the right thing for the community is for there to be a process for people to come into this country, for them to be vetted, for them to understand there's a standard that you have to abide by when you live here, and you have to abide by the rule of law. When you come in here as your very first act by breaking the law, you should not be allowed to stay until you can essentially navigate the correct process. So I support the effort 100%.
Now, the role of the district attorney.
The role of the district attorney, there's really very little role.
Right.
Other than to communicate. So you're absolutely right that most of the detainers are civil detainers. The courthouses have no choice but to cooperate. And frankly, they should. This is a law enforcement agency. And we have to uphold the law. Even if people don't like the law, even if people don't agree with the law, that's unfortunately where the Democrats, I think, have lost credibility with the public, is they don't like something, so they don't follow it. That's not how the law works. The law is the law, and if you want to change it, you go to the legislature and change it and advocate for it and get some support behind it. Even if people aren't comfortable with the idea of what the law is that you cannot be here as an illegal alien and you need to go. So I would say the DA's office, in whatever way it can support the law, must do that. And more importantly, needs to communicate with the public to correct some of the misinformation that's out there. There was a report the other day that some guy, this poor guy, he was deported because he had tattoos. What they didn't tell you is that the tattoos are consistent with the FBI system for grading gang members by tattoos, by associations, by pictures with gang signs, by social media posts. It's all part of a much larger assessment where we're able to identify these people.
Because, right, but is that alone enough?
So I would say I have to trust the law enforcement agencies that they are doing an assessment that maybe we don't know everything about, but the assessment includes the tattoos. It includes the larger FBI assessment. I would say the DA's office can have a part in communicating to the public why this is happening and that it makes us safer.
Well, real quick, because we're running out of time, but Snitch City, the article by the Boston Globe, your thoughts on that, and do you think that, you know, there's a role in the DA's office to kind of take a look at these different local police departments?
So I think there always has to be accountability back and forth. So not only do we need to support the police, because the vast majority are doing the right thing every day and it's a difficult job, but we need to make sure that that when informants are being misused, taken advantage of, and undermining the rule of law, that there's accountability there no matter what.
All right, Seth Aiken has been our guest. That's a fast hour. We thank you for coming down. He's running for district attorney, Bristol County, a year from now against Tom Quinn, the Democrat, first Republican since 1974 to run for a district attorney. You got about a minute left. How's the campaign been going? Have you enjoyed it?
The campaign's great. I've been all around Bristol County talking to Republican town committees. The people have fantastic questions. They're engaged. They're excited. I think they understand it's time for change. Bristol County is moving more and more red. I would just encourage people to go to my website, Aiken4, and that's the number 4, Aiken, number 4, DA.com. There's ways to get involved. There's ways to contribute. You can learn more about me. And I really just come to a Republican town committee meeting. I really look forward to meeting everyone out there.
All right. And of course, we invite Tom Quinn to join us anytime he'd like. He did indicate that he would when it gets a little bit closer. We still are a year away, so usually the challenger wants to come on first. And so the incumbent, he's certainly welcome to come on the show as we get a little bit closer to the election. So let's thank Seth Aiken, the challenger for Bristol County District Attorney. Don't forget, this Tuesday, the New Bedford City election, where the councilor at large race has to be reduced from